QR codes that was linked to the full paper, so I was going to take a photo of that and go to that, and also make a QR code at the end if you don't get it right back. So, to talk about my paper, which is titled The Fear of Injury, How Whistleblower Movement Affects Contract Extensions, I think it's best to talk about how I got the inspiration for the paper and why I got interested in this topic at all. I got started on this a little bit less than a year ago when Jared Weaver signed a 5-year, $85 million extension with the Angels in 2011. I think we can all agree that $85 million is a heck of a lot of money. We'd all like to have that $85 million. But if you think about it, well, what would Jared Weaver look like had he gone on the free agent market? And the fact of the matter is that had he made it on the free agent market at the end of this year, because he signed, he was under contract for 2012 anyway, had he been a free agent after this season, he would have made a lot more money than the contract that he signed. Some examples here of best pitchers in baseball at the time that they went on to the market. Johan Santana in 2008 signed for 6 years, $137 million. CeCe Sabathia signed for 7 years, $161 million. Cliff Lee signed for 5 years, $120 million. It's all a lot more than what Jared Weaver made. So the puzzle here is, why didn't Jared Weaver pursue free agency? And in general, why don't pitchers or why don't players pursue free agency? Why do they sign these contract acceptance? And Weaver sort of clued me into how I was going to go about trying to answer this, when at the press conference a few days after he signed the contract, he said, how much more money do you need? That's a fair question. I mean, think about this. This is a question I'm going to pose to you. Playing games risks catastrophic injury. If you get catastrophically injured, your arm falls off, something to that effect, you're going from a huge amount of money on that contract extension, $85 million, to absolutely nothing at all. So, would you prefer an $85 million contract guarantee? I just write you a check right now in this room for $85 million. Or, alternatively, we get out our iPhones, we get out a randomized device, and 90% of the time, I'll give you a check for $100 million, and the remaining 10% of the time, I'll give you nothing. If you calculate the expected value of playing that gamble, it's worth more in expectation, right? That's going to be worth $90 million on average. But I think a lot of us, and probably most of us in this room, would take the $85 million guaranteed because that affords some sort of safety and luxury that the gamble does not. And so in general, a risk-averse individual is willing to pay some sort of premium to ensure these average or decent outcomes as opposed to a better outcome and a really crappy outcome some of the time. So some big questions here. How does risk aversion affect contract extension negotiations? Why do some players pursue free agency? What accounts for the difference between players who re-sign with their teams versus players that go out into that free agency market? And when, or why do players sign contracts when they do? Jared Weaver signed in August of 2011. Why didn't he sign in September of 2011 or June of 2011? Why didn't he wait till this year to make that contract extension official? What accounts for this difference in timing? Well, I'm a game theorist, so I obviously think this is a game theory problem. We have a strategic situation here. Contract extensions, contract negotiations are strategic. There are competing factions. There's a player, there's a team. They have incentives to cooperate, but they also have a zero-sum game in the terms of how much they're getting paid and how much they are paid. If we just use informal, sort of linguistical explanations for this, the logic of it can get convoluted very quickly, and fortunately, game theory, which has been developed for decades now, allows us to sort out this logic by making sure that our conclusions directly come from their assumptions. And so the results that I got out of the model, which I will sort of explain in a second here, are, well, there's four here, there's more in the paper, but I think these are the four coolest points. I'll spend most of the time talking about the first one, and I'll briefly go over the other three, but there's actually full detail to read the paper. So the first thing I'm going to show you is that teams will always re-sign a player if he's sufficiently risk-averse. If a player is enough of a grading cat, it doesn't matter how much more money he would make if he becomes a free agent. He will still sign with this team that he's currently playing for. Second, I'll show that delay in agreement between the team and the player is a result of the team's uncertainty about how much of a grading cat the player is. The team doesn't know, and this is something that, you know, we should think that teams don't actually know the exact level of a player's risk aversion, because that's something inherent in the player, not directly observable. If that's the case, then what we'll see is the team will optimally start out by making smaller offers that the biggest Brady Cat players will accept, and then over the course of time, they'll increase the offers until the player sees enough money that he's no longer willing to continue gambling by playing a risky game. The third thing I'll show is that negotiations should not generally be suspended in season because it will inhibit this learning process, the team learning that the player is less risk-averse than they originally thought and therefore rationally updating their contract valuations and increasing the amount that they're willing to pay the player. And then lastly, this is a neat little point that I did not expect at all when I got into this project, but as it turns out, perfect player safety is suboptimal for the team when they're going to sign contract extensions. They actually prefer that there be a little bit of risk of injury and not perfect player safety for that purpose. Like I said, I'm going to spend most of the time talking about this and the rest of the proofs appear in the paper itself. So the model will look like this. We want to ask them that, you know, approximates what the real free agency or the real contract extension negotiation process looks like. So the paper, or the version that I'm going to present right now, is just going to be two periods where there's a preseason bargaining phase and an off-season bargaining phase. In the paper, I actually allow for mid-season bargaining to occur as well, but the results are essentially the same. That's what we'll see if there's just two periods. In each period, the team will make a contract offer to the player. The player accepts or rejects that contract offer. Accepting ends the game. The player receives that contract offer because contracts are guaranteed. And rejecting, on the other hand, will end the period. If the player rejects in the preseason, then he plays some games during the season. He risks injury, so with some probability, he'll lose an arm or something like that and get nothing. And with some remaining probability, he'll advance to the offseason without having any sort of negative effects to his body. And represent the probability that he doesn't get injured with T for that period between preseason and offseason. And after the offseason, if the team doesn't re-sign the player, then he goes on to the free agency market and signs somewhere else, or perhaps with the original team. The payoffs look like this. The team is going to value the player for some value P, which is just going to be some dollar value greater than zero. You can think of this as the maximum amount of money that the team is willing to pay the player to have the player play for the team, assuming that's not going to be. If the player reaches the free agent market, then he'll sign a contract with N greater than zero. We're not modeling the free agency process. We just need this sort of as a baseline to understand where we're going with the contract extension negotiations during the season. So he's just going to sign a contract with N dollars, whether it's from the team that he's playing for currently or a team elsewhere. It doesn't matter. It's just going to be N dollars. We're going to have the team be risk neutral, which means it's just going to maximize the value of the player times the probability the player actually doesn't get injured between the preseason and the offseason. Minus the cost of the contract. And the results actually only need the team to be less risk averse than the player, and I think that's a reasonable assumption. We should think that the team can sort of leverage its risk over a greater number of players than the player can, because the player's only got one guy. If his arm goes out, then there goes the contract, whereas the team can spread its risk around. So it makes sense that the team should be less risk averse than the player. The player, as I said though, on the other hand, is risk averse. So we're going to expect a utility function of X to be 1 over alpha, where X is the amount of money he's going to be making. The alpha parameter is just greater than 1, that represents the level of risk aversion, and greater levels of alpha represent greater levels of risk aversion or trading happiness. And we're going to assume first that this level of alpha is common knowledge, so the team actually can somehow magically observe the value or the level of risk aversion of the player. And in the paper, I do think that this is sort of a very strange assumption and probably not plausible, and so the paper relaxes that and allows for the team to not know it too. We'll get to that result in a second, but to get a baseline, you should just start out by assuming that it's common knowledge. So in game theoretical terms, this is a sequential game with complete information, so we're going to use backward induction. The idea of backward induction is what is rational and optimal today. It depends upon what's rational and optimal in the future, so we're going to start in the future, see what's the smartest play for both sides in the future, and then work our way backward to the preseason once we've known that. So this is what the game looks like in the offseason. The team makes an offer, which is just some value. We're denoting XO there, which is some level of money. The player can accept or reject. If the player accepts, then the team earns the value of the player V minus the contract cost XO, whereas the player receives the amount of money just raised to his utility function to make himself risk averse, to represent that risk aversion there. If the player rejects, then you advance it to some free agency subgame, which we're not really modeling here. That's sort of unimportant to the rest of this. The only thing we need to know is that the player will sign a contract for $10 in this case. So the player accepts the team's offer in the offseason, XO, if it is going to be greater than or equal to what he will expect to get as a free agent, which is $10. So the team earns V minus XO, the value of the player minus the contract cost, if it signs the player, and zero otherwise. We'll notice that XO is the optimal amount that the team is willing to give the player to make the player sign, because any more money is just a waste of money for the team. It's one to conserve as much money as possible. So therefore, the team offers the value of the contract N if the value of that contract, N dollars, is worth more than the value of the player. The value is worth more than the cost, right? That's really, really intuitive. This all shouldn't be surprising to us. It really gets complicated in the preseason. So if the value of the player is worth more than the contract cost, then the team signs the player, otherwise it doesn't sign the player. Things get more complicated when we move to the preseason. We have this possibility of injury in the interim. So in the beginning of the preseason, the beginning of the game entirely, the team will offer a contract, which we're denoting XP here, which is just some amount of money. The player accepts or rejects. If the player accepts, then the team earns with probability P, the probability the player doesn't get injured, times its value. But regardless of whether the player gets injured or not, the team still has to pay that cost of the contract XP. And the player just receives the contract cost, XP, which is raised to the level of risk aversion. If the player rejects, the nature will randomly determine whether the player gets catastrophically injured. So with probability 1 minus P, the player suffers an injury and everybody just gets nothing. And if the player does not get injured, you advance to the offseason. So there are two cases to consider here. First, what happens if the player were to re-sign during the offseason? And then second, what happens if the player doesn't re-sign during the offseason? Now, it should be fairly intuitive that if the player is going to resign with the team during the offseason, that they're going to be able to come to terms during the preseason. And this is just going to hold up right here. Suppose the player resigns during the offseason. If the player rejects the contract offer in the preseason, he earns the value of the contract in the future, which is going to be N, raised to the 1 over alpha, that's his expected utility, with probability P, and he gets nothing, because he's getting serious with probability 1 minus P. And so he's just going to accept if the value of the contract raised to the expected utility is greater than or equal to the probability that he gets the contract offer in the future, raised to the expected utility. You solve for the contract offer, you see that he'll accept anything greater than or equal to P to the alpha times N. So the smallest amount of money that the team needs to offer the player to get the player to sign is P to the alpha times N. If we look at this from the team's perspective, if the team offers P to the alpha times N, and the player signs, and the team earns P times V, which is the probability of the player not getting injured times the value, minus the contract cost. If the team fails to re-sign the player, then it gets with the probability the player doesn't get injured, the value of the player minus the contract cost is what happens in the offseason, and then with probability 1 minus P, nothing, because the player's getting injured. So the team re-signs the player if that inequality holds, which is just those two things match together. And you'll notice that this reduces to 1 is greater than a probability raised to an exponent. This has to be something between 0 and 1, so the inequality holds. And basically all this is showing is that our intuition was correct. If the player is willing to resign during the offseason, the team's going to resign during the preseason. The interesting case, though, is what happens when the team is not willing to resign the player in the offseason. So suppose that's the case this time. If the player rejects XP, he'll still earn that same contract offer in the future, N raised to 1 over alpha with probability P, and 0 to with probability 1 minus P, so the player is still going to accept as long as the contract offer in the preseason is greater than or equal to P to the alpha times N. So the smallest the team needs to offer the player to get the player to resign is P to the alpha times N. So suppose, looking at this from the team's perspective now, if the team offers that optimal contract offer, P to the alpha times N, and the player signs, and the team earns the probability the player doesn't get injured times the value minus the contract cost, which is the same as before. And if the team fails to re-sign the player, then it gets 0, because it's not going to sign the player during the offseason. So the team re-signs the player if that inequality holds. If you solve for B, that B is greater than or equal to P to the alpha minus 1 times N. Now let's compare the preseason to the offseason. The team is willing to re-sign the player in the offseason if the value is greater than or equal to N in the offseason. But in the preseason, the team is willing to re-sign the player if the value is greater than or equal to P to the alpha minus 1 times N. If we compare those two figures, you'll note that N is actually greater than P to the alpha minus 1 times N, which means the team is willing to re-sign players during the preseason. It is not willing to re-sign during the offseason. So that's the big result here with this complete information model. So the team is willing to reassign the player if the value is greater than or equal to that figure. We can solve for alpha, which remember is the level of risk aversion. And if you get that, then you get an inequality that looks like that. So this is alpha is greater than or equal to 1 plus just some really complicated number because we have natural logarithm term in there. But that's just going to be some number here. And so it doesn't matter how much the team values the player or how much the player will get in the offseason in free agency for that value N. Doesn't matter. As long as that player is scared enough, as long as that meets that requirement, then the player resigns with this team. And that's exactly what I just said. This might help to look at it visually to understand what's going on here. So we have the value of a player as a number line, where this is the team doesn't value the player at all. This is the team values the player a whole lot. When the team values a player a whole lot, it's always willing to re-sign the player regardless of the time period. If the team doesn't value that player at all, then it's never willing to re-sign that player. But in this middle case here, when the value of the player is in between e to the alpha minus 1 times n and n, the team is willing to re-sign that player during the preseason, even though it's not willing to re-sign that player during the offseason. And the way that we can see that the player will always re-sign with the team if the alpha is large enough is because you can give me any value here. Like, let's say the value is over here. If I manipulate this figure, I can make alpha really, really big, which makes this number really, really small and move that past the value of the player. So that's why the player is always going to re-sign with the team as long as enough to create. So yeah, the larger the alpha is, the greater risk premium the player is willing to pay to sign earlier. That drives down the contract prices early in the season for the team and makes the team actually willing to re-sign the player for lower prices. Alright, so now I'll quickly fire through these other results, which you can see in detail in the paper. So the second thing is that delay in agreement is a result of the team's uncertainty of how risk-averse the player is. So we want to explain delay. We see variation in the timing of player signings, right? Sometimes players sign in preseason, sometimes they sign during the season, sometimes they sign in the offseason. What accounts for that delay? Well, if a team isn't sure of the player's level of risk aversion alpha, it's going to increase its offers over the course of the season until the player accepts. The reason the team is willing to do this is because the player can credibly demonstrate his level of risk tolerance by going out onto the field every day and playing games and showing, hey, look, I'm not accepting that original offer that you gave me because that's too small. I'm going to show you that I'm actually willing to risk this by going out and playing and risking injury. And now I want more money. And the team's willing to do that because the team is actually learning here because the guy is going out on the field and playing and risking injury. There's a full proof in the paper if you want to see more of that. Okay. Third thing is that negotiations should not generally be suspended in season. And that stems from what I just talked about before. The process of playing allows the team to learn something about the player, and that's actually increasing the contract offers as the season progresses. And so if you just stop negotiating during the midseason, it's killing this learning process. The team's actually learning something about the player, but it can't utilize it because the sides aren't talking to each other. So the only really reason that you want to suspend midseason negotiations is if you know that the team is not going to re-sign the player under any circumstances. And so we can see a couple of examples of this last year with Pujols and Reyes, both of whom suspended midseason negotiations. And guess what? They did not re-sign with their team during the offseason. And this year, we have Molina and Wright doing the same thing, also from the Mets and the Cardinals. And so, all other things being equal, we should expect them not to re-sign with their teams when they do reach the free agent market. Last thing is that perfect player safety is suboptimal for the team in contract extension negotiations. Why is this the case? Well, let's look at a graph here. So, we have the y-axis being the team's expected payoff, and the x-axis being the level of player safety. If the level of player safety is non-existent, so probability the player gets injured, or probability the player doesn't get injured is nothing, he's always getting injured every time he goes out, well that means the team is completely unable to get the value out of the player because the player is always getting injured, so the team gets very little. On the other end of the spectrum, when there's perfect player safety, then the team gets a good amount because it's actually getting some value out of the player because the player isn't getting injured. But the problem is that the team can't offer the player a smaller contract. Because the player isn't scared. He has nothing to be scared about. He's never getting injured. And so, as it turns out, the optimal level of player safety for the team actually falls somewhere in between for the purposes of re-signing players for contract extensions. Now, a couple of quick little notes here. On a moral standpoint, this is just a model of contract extension negotiations. It's not a model of does my owner actually care about my personal health. Presumably, teams do care about their players to some extent on that regard. So that's not incorporated in the model, don't take it for that. And teams also do have incentive to keep players safe because they have other players who are already re-signed to long-term deals and they want to preserve the player's value by not getting injured. So that's important. But at the end of the day, sports always carry some sort of inherent risk, and there's nothing the teams can do to mitigate that. And at least for this purpose, the teams actually benefit from that risk of injury to some degree. That's all I have. Thank you for coming out here. Again, the QR code of the paper is on the screen. My contact information is there. Thanks, and I'll wait your questions.
So, in regards to your model, with the Jose Reyes example,
yeah.
He is a player who had an injury history, but on top of that, he's also a shortstop. He's also a player that relies on speed. So, do you think it was high too high of a risk move for him to suspend negotiations mid-season? Because do you think that's why the Mets? Because I can't remember if it was the Mets side or if it was Reyes side to cut off negotiations. But just based on his injury history, based on the model, it would seem almost foolish for somebody who has that high of an apparent injury risk to suddenly cut off negotiations.
So there's two things that account for trading patterns, right? The first one is the actual probability of injury, which is to some degree observable. The other half of it is this inherent trait, which is the alpha parameter, the risk aversion parameter. And in terms of trying to pin down exact cases like that, it can be difficult to see what's going on there. The model would suggest that it's the reason that Jose Reyes is willing to suspend negotiations is because he is just not afraid at all, and he's willing to assume that risk. But in terms of being able to test that out, that's just something that you can't test precisely because it's an inherent trait. It's a good question. Thank you.
What role do those players' agents play in all this? It seems there are certain agents, Scott Boras, who are much more likely to direct their clients to approach free agency rather than re-signing. Is that accounted for in your observation?
So the model does not have any principal agent problems like that you discussed. One would hope that agents act for the best of their players. One thing I did consider, though, maybe this is actually worth noting in the paper, and I haven't done this yet, but now that you've raised it, I think I will, because there's obviously some concern here, is that because players just receive some sort of cut of what's going on here, and agents receive some sort of cut of what's going on here, agents can also sort of leverage their risk across a lot of players. And so if they're just trying to maximize what they want, then they should actually be pushing their players to actually reach free agency. And so, you know, there is that principal agent problem there. And so maybe the result that you should state is that players should actually get to know what they're getting into with their agents and make sure that they're controlling their agent's behavior and not the other way around. Good point. Thank you. Yeah.
What about the laws for
Yeah, you could redo the model so that you have various levels of injury, and the important thing is just that there's some level of risk aversion from the player, and that he is more risk averse in those seasons. It would just really complicate the algebra because you have, instead of just like two turns, it would be like three or four on each of them. Yeah.
I noticed that the whole thing you set up on the basis of something that open market creating value will be higher than the offers that the player is receiving. Players receiving from a team, in particular, before the season begins, because at that point the player then assumes it has the injury worries, which doesn't really happen until the season begins. One other thing that I wondered whether or not in your paper you take into account the fact that the information base about the player's level of ability, though, changes. In other words, the problem is that it's fixed in your sample, but actually ends a little bit fuzzy now. A little bit less fuzzy before you get to the season. In other words, if Reyes plays the season out and has a really great year, well, then that will be rather large, but going into the season, he may not really, even though both the team and him don't have a good idea where he is going to.
Yeah, so this is something that I think we discussed last night, right? As long as the team and the player have a mutual understanding about the possibilities of the player, and whether he'll just like excel or not excel, and they're in agreement there, I don't know this for sure, but I do suspect that the same results hold, because the player being risk-averse should want to mitigate the difference and be willing to sign these risk-reduced contract offers. Not positive. But I think that's the case. I do think you would get an interesting and a different result if you allowed for there to be uncertainty about whether the player is actually capable of doing good things. And that presumably could be something that the player knows better than the team, because that's something that he's more aware of his body than what the team is aware of. And that would get you a different result than that. Something that would be interesting for future research.
I think we can squeeze in one more question.
Yeah, one more.
In your model, the P and the alpha depend on the player.
or the player and his agent in the case of the alpha.
But the V is the team's evaluation of the player.
The V and the N depend on the marketplace, what all the other teams' needs are, and who else is going to be available as free agents later. So it seemed to me that there's so much more uncertainty in those two variables. But you're trying to determine the outcome. Is that the case?
So there could be uncertainty regarding the N. It's reasonable to believe that there could be some uncertainty regarding the N. But everything in this will hold up as long as the player and the team have the same expectations about what's going to go on in the future. If someone can make a compelling case to me why the team and the player would have a better expectation of what the free agent market is going to look like, then this would break down to some degree. I'm not convinced, though, that there's a good reason to believe that one side would have a better idea about what's going to go on in the free agent market, because you do have a lot of investment on both sides and learning about what's going to happen in the free agent market. Thank you.
All right.
I'll be back if anyone else has any other questions, and thanks again.
Thanks. Well, it's